The Man in Line with Andy Wint.
Fast am I, good afternoon, welcome to Man in Line on Manx Radio. Open line through till one, so the floor is yours, whatever you want to say. Get in touch by calling 66 13 68, text 166 177, WhatsApp, same number, 166 177, but you will need us in your contacts to get through. You can send us voice messages, photos and everything. Or you could email studio at manxradio.com. Quite a night last night at the Roundhouse, with a requisition meeting with Bratton Commissioners and the Roundhouse. Perhaps you were there if you want to tell us all about it. And also, is the government doing enough to support first-time buyers on the Isle of Man? The Infrastructure Minister, Mr. Crookall, says yes. Do you have any opinion on that, first-time buyers, getting people onto the property ladder? And anything else on your mind? David's first with us today. Hi, David.
Hi, Andy. Do you remember the place called Glenside?
Oh, yes.
On the, up near the Governor's Dip there.
Yes, at the top of Victoria Road, yeah.
Yeah, Summerhill Views. Looks a great place. I haven't been round yet for a skeet. But I just wondered, A, what's happening with the building? It looks as though the builder's done a great job. It's landscaped and everything. It's going to be a perfect setting when people get older. And I'm sure me and Stu Peters would like one in the corner together so we can ramble at each other. But I just wondered, what's going on with Mr. Hooper, and who's going to run it?
The last time that Theresa Cope was on, she mentioned around Easter. Now, Easter, of course, is in two weeks' time.
Yeah, yeah. But wouldn't you think we should be brand new building? It's up tested, be given all the certificates. People have got to organise things. They've got to organise the transfer, where they're coming from. Say they're in a different home. There's an Esme unit in there, which is for people who've got dementia. And these services or these facilities now are begging to be occupied by people who want them, so others can get relief regarding the issues that they have.
Well, I've heard no rumour at all. And as you say, bearing in mind that people will have to be transferred or people will be signing contracts, we don't even know who's going to run it, whether it's a private contractor that's going to run it, like the one at Salisbury Street. But obviously, government built, it's ready and waiting. Staffing is going to be a big problem as well, I would imagine. But by the fact that we are 2 weeks away from Easter, I think we can fairly say it's not going to open for Easter.
Well, I would think so too. But I'm just wondering what's happening out there. And I'm just wondering, I met a lady today who was been to visit, said this will be a great place for her, and she's wanting to move and get in settled towards the summer, and it's a better time to do it in the summer, but had no further contact to say when it's going to happen, B, what it's going to cost, you know, if this private sector is going to come in. The building is owned by government, or also as a taxpayer. So why aren't we getting somewhere on it? And I just love to... Maybe we can chat to Mr. Hooper sometime if he's not too busy.
It will be nice to know. It will be nice to know exactly when that is. Actually, Mr. Hooper's in a couple of weeks' time, along with his constituency colleague. So hopefully we'll ask him then. There's a Ramsey constituency man in line. But as you say, the fact that this is... I mean, that, I would imagine, this new one, Summerhill Views, and what's the other one? Incannel Court. They are the TT care homes, aren't they? They're fantastic, right on the course.
Yes. And, I remember, it's been a long time since Incannel Court did it, but they used to do teas and coffees, I'm sure, out the front, and make a little money for their comfort fund, because each resident used to get, in my day anyway, a little while ago now, 15 quid for their toiletries and bits and pieces, you know, to keep them happy. But I just wonder what's going on with the contract. I've not seen it going out to tender. I've not seen some big advert in the Courier or whatever saying, you know, this is the tender. What is the job description? What is the contract?
Well, let's find out about that then. So where is Summerhill Views? When's it going to open? Who's going to run it? And more importantly, how much is it going to cost? All right. Okay, David.
See you, boy. Bye-bye.
Appreciate that. Thanks for that. Oh, and talking of things going out to tender, I was very interested to see that the government has issued a notice for expressions of interest. The Department of Infrastructure wants to explore the market to identify interest from experienced suppliers to provide a safe container for the transport, storage and shipping of damaged or potentially damaged lithium-ion batteries and battery electric vehicles. The DOI is keen to be proactive in exploring solutions that will build resilience into its current processes. Are you following this? As we transition to new technologies and as the uptake of low and zero emission forms of transportation increases. I think they're talking about EVs, don't you? They want a specialized salvage container that's been identified as one such mechanism for transporting, storage and shipping of damaged lithium-ion batteries and damaged electric vehicles. We're taking it from this. The steam packet doesn't want to know. Interested parties should get in touch with the government. You know, if you go to the procurement website, a part of the government website. But that was spotted recently. So if you're interested in this, but just read between the lines. The DOI wants somebody to take damaged or potentially damaged lithium-ion batteries and battery electric vehicles off the Isle of Man. Hence the reason why some insurance companies on the Isle of Man aren't insuring EVs because it costs far too much to take them off the Isle of Man, and the steam packet presumably doesn't want potentially damaged lithium-ion batteries on board the Manxman just in case the worst ever happens. It begs the question for all this, what's the financial model for this? Who's going to be picking up the tab for government hiring somebody to take damaged or potentially damaged lithium-ion batteries and battery electric vehicles off the Isle of Man? So where's the cost going to come? Who's going to pay it? And how's it going to be distributed? If you know all about transporting lithium-ion batteries, it will be nice to hear from you. I wonder whether you, and first-time buyers and housing just comes up all the time. When we, 2.5 years ago, when the election was, and before that, during canvassing, everybody was talking about housing, second only probably to green issues. Housing, of course, is relevant to many people who are trying to get on the housing ladder on the Isle of Man. Is the government doing enough to support first-time buyers on the Isle of Man? Well, the infrastructure minister says yes. The number of people using two of its schemes to get on the ladder has gone up in the last 2 years. Since 2022, 60 homes have been bought, either using the First Home Choice or the First Home Fixed schemes. And if you've got experience of these, we'd love to hear from you. Tim Crookall has been talking to Manx Radio.
One of them is for brand new houses, first-time buyers, and the other one is for houses that are not first-time buyers, but houses that are readily available on the market, but have to come up to certain standards. So, and it's really good news in the last couple of years now. We're just over 60 people that we've helped to get into their own homes. A pot of money was put into the schemes, if you like, to start with, and it's just going round and round and round. So as people are moving into houses and they're paying back, any surplus is then being lent out again. So it's a good news story, and say hopefully we'll be more than that next year and keep on growing it and help people, because it is, we absolutely know it's hard to get into the property market, so it's the right thing for us to be doing.
And I think that's the thing, because at the moment, as you say, it is very hard to get into the property market. And if we look at the schemes themselves, so I mean, if we look at the First Home Fixed, one of the examples it gives is that if you're a couple with one or more children, you can't earn more than £55,000 because it's targeted at low-income households, and you'd only be able to buy a 2 or 3-bedroomed house for a maximum of £185,000. And to a lot of people looking for a house at the moment, those might seem quite low figures. Are the thresholds going to be looked at in the future in terms of who can apply for that in particular scheme?
Yeah, we've seen the market move quite a lot in the last few years, and we need to keep reviewing those figures, probably annually. Those figures do seem quite low, and you know, while they're probably okay for flats and things, yeah, we need to be looking at that. And the first-time buyers, the smaller houses, the two-bedroom, we need to be looking to make sure that those the right property is available for the right people and the families.
And how much of a priority is that for the department?
It's a big priority for the department, and obviously the Housing and Communities Board now is getting involved in all sorts of things. So housing was seen to be, you know, an issue on the doorstep 2 years ago at the election, and we're moving on now, hopefully, and with David Ashford moving into the Housing and Communities Board as chairman there, and the department, hopefully in the next year or two, we'll see a lot more, or in fact next year, we'll see a lot more action on it.
And if we look at the First Home Choice Scheme, so under that scheme, you have to save up a deposit of 5%. If we take, you know, an average house price over here, which has been floating around the £325,000 mark for the last few years, you're talking about £16,000 that needs to be saved. And how achievable is that for people here on the island in the current environment?
It is doable, you know, as we've seen, and we have helped people in this market, but it is tight, and as we said, we need to keep reviewing those figures to make sure they're accessible to everybody. Otherwise, there's no point in running the schemes. But the schemes have been successful, and we need to keep making sure they stay successful.
Do you think that the government is doing enough to help people get onto the ladder?
I think it is, and I think we keep looking at the moment, but, you know, it's a case of whether we can put more money into the scheme to help more people. Money is tight at the moment, as we know, but if we can afford to, we'll absolutely do that.
If you're involved in this, i.e. if you're trying to get on one of the two schemes, First Home Choice or First Home Fixed, I just wonder, Amy was talking about the fact that, you know, £325,000 for a house to start off now at the moment, as it could be a flat, but if you're a family, if you're, husband and wife, father and mother, and one or two children, you're not really going to be moving into a flat for good. So you're wanting to buy a house. Any thoughts on this? So we're talking about young people getting onto the housing ladder, not just families, but also couples and single people. Any thoughts on this, particularly when rents are going up and up? Brian's with us now. Hi, Brian.
How are you, Andy?
Good, thanks.
I had a good night last night in Braddon.
Oh, did you have some fun? It was a free show.
It was a free show. I did a bit of boxing myself, but I restrained myself because my interest in Braddon, very luckily, are minimal. I'd hate to have any more of my property portfolio in that district. Scary stuff. Andrew Jessop got up. He took a hammering all night long, but I got to give him 10 out of 10 for his waffle. I can only give him 0 out of 10 for actually coming across with any substance. And pointing the finger at government, they won't do this for us. They're making us put a crossing in. Well, that's what happens in the private sector, Andrew. You have to comply with all government's wishes, and you should have done the same. However, there is more serious issues here. Taking rough figures now, just had a quick look at the population of Braddon online. It's a figure from 2016. Quick division tells me that every man, woman, child and baby in Braddon now are in debt to the amount of almost £3,000. Braddon have got a deficit there. The roundhouse is currently cost them £10.5 million, and they haven't got a hope on this earth of ever getting a revenue stream that will pay for it. Andrew's most optimistic view was it will take 30 years to bring this under control. And he was hoping for an all-island leisure rate. Well, anybody who doesn't live in Braddon is going to go out and slaughter any politician that suggests for one moment that the rest of the island should take on that level of debt just to bail Braddon out of the cart. And if David Eyre or any of the other commissioners are thinking of joining that club, well, don't. Now, how did they get there? Now, I can blame the commissioners, all very nice, stupid people, but you've got to look at the audience who are giving them such a hard time. They were elected. Now, they haven't become stupid and experienceless people. They were just as stupid and experienceless when they were put in office. the electorate, that's you and I, have a responsibility to eke out people to represent us that have experience and acumen and intelligence and integrity. If we just look for the smiley face and the man who drives me round from my care home, well, you're going to get the people who are just diving there for the money and have nothing to bring to the table. Central government is the same. We've got a clutch of people there who've sat by and watched a terminal in Liverpool go up by four times its price. We've got a promenade that they say is finished that looks like a patchwork quilt. And I could go on and on and on about the stupid expenditure of our money. Our national health is screaming out for more funding. It's getting more money now than it's ever had in its history. And the service that we're getting, well, I've spent most of my life without a dentist. Getting a national health dentist is almost impossible at the moment.
Just going back to the roundhouse, Brian, so do you think this was a good idea initially, that you just, but the costs have spiralled out of control and the commissioners found themselves between the devil and the deep blue sea? They really couldn't get out of it.
Well, yeah, quite possibly you could look at it from that viewpoint, but let's go right back when they, at the original inception of it, when they looked at it and they had a price, and they hadn't put a spade in the ground, and they had a price for doing the job, or an estimate for doing the job, of £4 million. Now, it barely stood up financially at £4 million. And then they had a change. There were modifications made, and it went up to £5 million. And they just approved the go-ahead at 20% more, £5 million, without looking at how they were going to fund it, how it was going to generate revenue. And they've gone on and on with this, and I can see once they've got down that road, it's difficult to pull out. But they should have pulled the plug at day one. But quite honestly, a local authority with something like 4,000 people in its area shouldn't be getting involved in major projects like this one. That's a role for central government. They haven't got the expertise, experience, funding, or political backing at high level to go punching their way through these projects. What did they think they were playing at? And as I said before, they sat there on the podium, so to speak. John Moss was there also. I didn't get a chance to speak to him, but I could see his head shaking from time to time at the way they tried to answer some of the questions. And Andrew kept blaming the central government won't let us drive on their roadway. Well, hang on. Why didn't you get that bolted down on day one? I wouldn't build a house that I didn't have permission to drive to. So what are you doing spending £10.5 million on something without an access road?
It's very nice, though, isn't it? The roundhouse, it is a lovely building.
In what respect? I can't see. You see, I come from a business background. You know that a lot of my life was associated with a very unpleasant man, according to some people, Albert Goubet. I actually got on quite well with him. The thing with Albert, you did what you were contracted to do. And if you did it, that's fine. He was a happy bunny. Now, once you start doing what they've done, and they've let the control on this go silly, the design has gone silly. I mean, we were talking about the incidentals last night, which was a little bit off track, but the lights are on all night. And one of the commissioners jumped up to defend having the lights on all night by saying they had solar panels on the roof. Well, Oh, come on, please, please. I mean, these people should not be getting involved in anything other than the major function of a local authority, which is to look after the refuge collection and the likes. You know, a lot of local authorities do an excellent job, but they're getting out of their depth. This is another incident like Port St. Mary. And we, the people of the Isle of Man, not the politicians, the people of the Isle of Man, are carrying the financial burden of that cock-up.
Okay.
And we've got another one on our hands here, and the people of Braddon are stuck with it for most of their lifetimes. And it's not a small amount of money. It's major money, and I can't see how they can ever get out of it. The interest payments alone are £600,000 a year, we were told. Now, maybe they're praying for a drop in interest, but how are you going to balance that? The revenue that that building can generate, pretty though it may well be, is less than a third of that, and that's before you take expenses. And your very pretty building is also a high maintenance building. It's not, as you would in the private sector, be looking 10 years down the line at your maintenance costs. They have built this thing, and it's pretty with its bells and whistles and all the rest of it. But as I used to say on Onken Commissioners time and time again, if somebody donates a memorial seat or something, that's very nice, but it has to be maintained in perpetuity. We have to look after it, that sweep around it, paint it, ensure that it's in good condition. You know, you can't just build these things. Everything that you build, every project that you take responsibility for, has an ongoing cost. And that's going to be a real mess. And I come back to the problem. Since, I think it was 1984, we started paying our politicians. And gradually, that's been a money tree for people who bring nothing to the party. I hear everybody spouting off about all of the problems with the planet and all the rest of it. But I want somebody to come forward with proposals and back them up with information, proper researched information. That isn't going to happen with electric vehicles. We're charging down that route, and on your news or your earlier contributor, there are issues with that, and there are issues with everything else. And if you really want to save the planet, just look at the population problem. Look at an image that you can get online of this planet from a satellite, and it's almost totally enveloped in streetlights and car headlights. We are just choking this world. And just in case you worried, we're doing that to the Isle of Man. And we're doing it, our new residence policy, which isn't really a policy, but we're attracting more and more residents for one reason and one reason only. They have not looked after the national purse very well, and their only way to keep the national health on the Isle of Man going is to increase the number of people working here. And that's not been thought through either, has it?
Okay. All right, Brian, we appreciate that. Thanks for calling us today.
Welcome. Thank you.
Good to hear from you. In fact, let's also hear from the chair last night, this Andrew Jessop. Braddon commissioners were vigorously criticised at a standing room only meeting at the handling of the Roundhouse project. By the end of the evening, one MHK turned up. Jane Paul Wilson was there. Stu Peters wasn't. She said they should be working towards solution. Captain of the parish, Phil Cayley, had basically recused himself past the chairing of the hearing to the neighbouring parish, Captain Charles Farger. Let's hear from Chair of Braddon Commissioners, Andrew Jessop.
Auditors have recently asked for it to be valued, the building, and none of the estate agents on the island have sufficient indemnity cover for valuing a building that is over £4 million in value. Therefore, an off-island valuer will need to be engaged to conduct the valuation. We did question why it is necessary for signing off last year's accounts, as the building wasn't handed over until this financial year, but the Auditor General has insisted we produce a figure. The issues surrounding access to the Roundhouse and how they will impact on next year's financial performance is the other reason. However, we have produced updated cash flow forecasts, and they've been submitted to Treasury, and they appear to be satisfied. We have relayed this information to the auditor in the hope it satisfies them too. As far as we know, though, we are not alone, and other authorities are also having difficulties in having their accounts signed off. So much so, there has been advice issued by the department. And I quote, "As you are aware, the reporting deadline under Regulation 16 of the Accounts and Audit Regulations 2018 is the 31st of October, which you have missed. In order to meet the administrative deadlines for Tynwald, the department wished to advise of a new date in order for the local authorities to provide us with a copy of your accounts. The new deadline is no later than noon on Tuesday, the 2nd of April 2024.
There it is. That's the Chair of Braddon Commissioners, Andrew Jessop, talking last night about even valuing the Roundhouse as it stands at the moment. It is plainly a bit of a pickle. How we get out of it, how Braddon commissioners get out of it, the ratepayers of Braddon, the facility is there. Now remember, local authorities do have duties, providing things like community halls. This just happens to be a very big community hall that cost a lot of money. Now, whether it was COVID, whether it was the global price of cement or getting labour, we don't know. But it is, as I said, something of a pickle, and it has to be got out of. What happens next, I wonder?
We'll gather here today.
All her friends thought Kerry was going to be a right bridezilla. She was so determined that everything had to be totally perfect. But they needn't have worried, because Cornister Bank had Kerry's back.
Do you, Kerry, have the Cornister feeling?
I so do.
Wedding finance with a 3-month honeymoon period before payments start. Visit cornisterbank.co.im and you can get the Cornister feeling too. All loans are subject to status, terms and conditions apply. Early settlement fees apply.
Are you concerned about your eye health? Holmes and Davidson Opticians in Douglas are proud to offer the Eidon Ultra Wide Field Retinal Imaging and Heidelberg 4D OCT systems. State-of-the-art machines that allow early detection and management of eye diseases. Don't wait. Book your appointment today and ensure the health of your eyes with the best technology available. Call 676 230 or visit holmesanddavidsonopticians.co.uk now.
This Easter, don't miss the Dino Express Easter Holiday Adventure. Journey from Douglas Station to Ballasalla with a dinosaur treasure hunt on the way. Then your Jurassic Ranger will escort you by bus to Russian Abbey, where you'll meet Loki the Velociraptor, Bronwyn the Brontosaurus, and much more. To avoid dinosaur disappointment, book now. Call 662-525 or visit rail.im.
The only radio station that's Manx, and we're proud of it. Celebrating 60 years, this is Manx Radio.
Tonight here on Manx Radio at 6 o'clock, join Kiri Kermode and myself, Simon Clark, for a special Isle of Man Young Farmers Concert edition of Countryside.
We catch up with the winners, the sponsors, the judges and some of the guests on the night.
And we'll mix in some of the broadcastable clips from each of the four concerts.
That's all in Countryside tonight here on Manx Radio at 6 o'clock. And don't forget, you can download and subscribe to the podcast for free at manxradio.com.
The Man in Line with Andy Wint.
Text, email, call and WhatsApp. Do we know the projected income from the hall versus the cost of servicing the debt going forward, i.e. is there a profit from the day-to-day operation, says Simon. Where was Stu Peters last night, said Roy. Surely it's very important to him and the electorate in Braddon. Brian spoke a lot of sense about the groundhouse, but now it's built, can't just be left empty. Somebody needs to get a grip and sort the problem out, says Sue. This is it. Yes, let's look forward, shall we? And also to Julian with us now. Hi, Julian.
Hi, Andy. How you doing?
Good, thanks.
Good, good. Just quickly, before my subject, I noticed there was an interesting exchange in America with the Nebraska Senator, Deb Fischer. You can see it if you look for Fischer, F-I-S-C-H-E-R, presses NTSB chair on safety risks of EVs. Turns out that 40% of first responders have no training in terms of dealing with fires on EVs. And of course, as we know, once they get going, very hard to stop. But another thing that came out from the NTSB discussion was that the size and weight of these larger EVs are starting to cause problems in accidents where crash barriers are not able to restrain them from crossing over into the other carriageway. They were saying that there were several large, the big SUV vehicles where the battery weighs the same as a Honda Civic now. On top of that, you've got the chassis of the vehicle. So that was another thing that was to be borne in mind, apart from the fact that the roads are starting to wear faster with the weight of them. The subject I was going to mention, there was a texter yesterday, S768, who was mentioning that Holland doesn't have any problems with assisted suicide legislation. I noticed that the Hague-based Euthanasia Expertise Centre, now they help people with assisted suicide when their own doctor refuses to break their Hippocratic Oath of first do no harm. Now, Holland has a tenth of the UK population, but the statistics for 2022 was that there were 4,159 requests for euthanasia. 1,240 of them were granted, and 20% of them were purely on psychological grounds. They seem to be working with their version of the NHS, which is called the Ministry for Public Health and Mental Health Services, where they try to increase knowledge about the euthanasia centre. Problems that they've also had in Holland is that psychologists and psychiatrists have also been shying away from euthanasia as a solution, as they report that often the patients suffering from psychological illnesses are relatively young, and it's difficult to determine if all the treatment options have been exhausted, especially when the complexion these days is that they're seeing assisted suicide as a more acceptable way out. I'll quote that. A perfect example to quote for this story is of a Jeanette Hall in Oregon. Oregon commenced assisted suicide legislation in 1998, so they were one of the very early adopters. And 2 years after that, Jeanette was diagnosed with a terminal cancer and 6 to 12 months to live. Now, she requested her own doctor, Dr. Kenneth Stevens, to begin the process of enrolling her in the assisted suicide Oregon thing. She was already depressed with some family problems and bereavement. However, her doctor convinced her to try treatment, as he was convinced that it would help. And he also promised her that she would be able to attend her son's future graduation ceremony. And sure enough, she took his advice, she had the treatment, she got better, attended her son's graduation ceremony, and is still alive and thriving now, 24 years later. And she says that she's happy that her doctor intervened and gave her hope.
I think at the centre of all this, death, Julian, is a very personal subject, and how people view their own death and their own lives is very different, in fact, almost individual. So in having a state sponsored scheme, an administrative format put in by legislation for people to end their own lives, has only arrived in the past, 40-odd years. What is your opinion of this? Do you think the Isle of Man should have this scheme and should have, absolutely tailor-made, bulletproof legislation that can't be changed with secondary legislation, or is it a step too far as you're concerned?
Well, if you ever ask advice, it's always best to ask somebody who's been there already, I would say. Now, I've mentioned this guy before. Theo Boer was one of the first guys. He was a chief regulator and an ethicist who did the Belgian and the Dutch when they first started down this road in 2001. And now he has written a letter. What he said is, and I'll take his advice because he was at the center of all this at the start. He said there were various legal safeguards that were put in place in 2001. Now, in 2007, Theo wrote, there doesn't need to be a slippery slope when it comes to euthanasia. However, now Theo is saying, and I quote, but we were wrong, terribly wrong. Beginning in 2008, the numbers increased by 15% year on year. He said, euthanasia is becoming a default mode of dying for cancer patients. A further escalation was the introduction of a network of travelling, euthanising doctors, bypassing the usual doctor-patient relationship. These travelling doctors have only two options, administer life-ending drugs or send the patient away. Also, increasing numbers of requests were from people with autism, dementia and psychiatric illnesses.
Whereabouts is this, Julian?
This was in Belgium.
Right.
I'd almost finished. He said, whereas euthanasia was originally touted as an exception, euthanasia in the Netherlands is increasingly being seen as a right with corresponding pressure on doctors to comply. Theo finishes his letter with, I used to be a supporter of this legislation, but now with years of experience, I take a different view. Is the explosion in numbers because safeguards have become insufficient, or is it because the mere existence of such a law is an invitation to see assisted suicide and euthanasia is a normality instead of a last resort? Once the genie is out of the bottle, it's highly unlikely to ever go back in again. And that's Theo Boer that started this whole thing, and you could say he's the guy with the most experience in this in the world.
And will you be at the meeting tonight at the Max Museum?
If I can get there, I will. I think the problem is that there's a difficulty in talking about this. I know it's a difficulty in it because it's highly emotive.
Yeah.
But the last thing you want to do is put through legislation based on emotion, I think. So okay. That's a no thing.
Appreciate that, Julian. Thanks for calling today.
Thanks, Andy. Cheers.
All right. Got a message in from another Julian, this one in Port St. Mary. Surely assistance from the government for first-time buyers will only inflate the market. I don't think this has been thought through properly. This is what to do for first-time buyers and the schemes that are currently available. Alison from Moran Commissioners says the best decision that Moran ever made was not to join Braddon to form one authority. I'm pretty good at spending other people's money, says Desmond. So if you know of anybody who's got spare cash, I can do it quite easily. Why don't they put up corporate tax to 1%? That would generate 500 million and not put up tax for residents, says Texter 450. Sell the roundhouse, says Kingo, to the DHSC and it can be turned into new nurses' accommodation. It's a bit big. They'd have to compartmentalise it, wouldn't they? It's just a big sports hall at present. Nobody needs it, says Kingo. A good idea at the time. So the roundhouse meeting last night, the requisition meeting, standing room only at the roundhouse last night. We had a microphone to see some of the contributions from the floor.
When we go into a project, we do projections for 3 years. And they are only projections. They're budgeted figures. It sounds to me like you've done this on the back of a fag packet, literally. And it's almost like you're making it up as you're going along tonight. That is the impression I'm getting, and I think other people here are as well.
Thank you.
It was £3.5 million. It then went up. When you went to tender, you had three quotes of £7 million to build the facility. At that stage, as a businessman, I would have looked at this and thought, hang on a minute, this has doubled in that period. Is this viable for me to carry on with? You guys must have had these conversations. You must have had these conversations.
Yeah.
And if you didn't, we're in an even worse situation than I thought we were.
It's scary.
It's every person in here is now in an invidious position. I'm in the lucky position. I can pay you 37%. I don't want to, and I'm very much seriously contemplating just paying you last year's rate. Let you take me to court.
If you like it or not, we've got a £10 million deficit that we are going to have to pay.
This building will be a drag on the ratepayers for the next 30 years.
That's just some of the contributions from the floor of the requisition meeting at the Roundhouse in Braddon last night.
For over 100 years, Manx National Heritage has been collecting objects for the people of the Isle of Man. From art to archaeology, national history, motorcycles and more. Our museums are home to the national treasures of the Isle of Man. Discover their story at the Manx Museum and House of Mananan. Open daily from 9:30 until 4:30.
Have you been invited to take part in the Household Income and Expenditure Survey? It's one of the most important surveys for our island because the information you provide is vital data for our island's financial planning. It helps us calculate our VAT revenue from the UK. Plus, it gives us a better understanding of the financial strains on residents, so we can support those who are struggling. March is the last month you can take part. So visit gov.im/HIES now.
Business owners, if you're looking to get involved in a great local cause, then find out about the Queen's Pier Restoration Trust. Opportunities include helping out and discovery days for staff, along with sponsorship opportunities to help with the restoration. Call Graham on 355 104 to discuss the corporate support options available to keep this historic Manx landmark for future generations. Call Graham today on 355 104. This audio has been kindly sponsored by Paul Carey and Sons.
As your public service broadcaster, it's crucial for Manx Radio to mirror the Isle of Man. That's why we're asking the question, what matters most? We want to know your opinions of the nation station and island life. Your thoughts could play a vital part in shaping our news and current affairs programmes. Go now to manxradio.com to take part in our short online survey. And as a thank you for taking part, you'll be entered into a prize draw to win either dinner, bed and breakfast for two at the Manin Hotel, a £100 heating or road fuel voucher from Ellen Vanin Fuels, or a 12-month family pass for Groudle Glen Railway. What matters most? Take part now at manxradio.com.
The Man in Line with Andy Wint.
Well said, Brian, says Dewan. A different Dewan, this is. Absolutely spot on. I'm glad that you've spoken out regarding all this. Also, the cost of a new building from January 25th will cost a lot more because government's insisting that only renewable energy can be used. This will put homes further out of reach for first-time buyers, says David. And Steve's with us now. Hi, Steve.
How you doing? You okay?
Good, thanks, yeah.
Good, man. No, it's just, it's quite refreshing, actually, to hear the recordings you've played about people standing up for the rights, you know, at the meeting and kicking off saying that, you know, they don't want to be paying it and they might not pay this year's rates and they'll pay net last year. I think it's brilliant because it's about time that the Manx public took control and stood up and said no. Because the government, it's not just about this time, but it's like how much of the government wasted of all our money on different projects over the years, and no one ever kicks off about it or ever sticks together. And maybe this will be the start of it where we can, you know, stand up and say no. You know, the government never ask about doing a project. They just come along and they're going to build this, and they build whatever they want to build, and they expect the money to come back from the Manx residents.
Well, that was fine, Steve. Do you remember, I mean, 20-odd years ago, we couldn't, we were building everything, the IRIS scheme, the hospital, the incinerator, mm-hmm. the power station, but we had the money then. That was the key.
Correct. Well, that's the thing, Andy, and one of your callers said about the NHS, you know, instead of ploughing money and building an absolute... I mean, you said it, I mean, you've got to watch what you say on radio, but you said it was a nice building. Andy, you know, Summerland was a good building, but it wasn't good enough, knocked it down, but any excuse wasn't safe. We knocked it down, didn't build anything to replace it, took the Crescent, nothing to replace it. There's been nothing to replace for families that already live on the Isle of Man. And they go and build a basic building and with a sports hall in it, and a soft play area inside it, Andy, which literally isn't fit for purpose. It's rubbish. A dentist, which we can't get hold of, NHS dentists, but they're proud to say they're putting a private dentist in. It doesn't make sense what goes on this island, Andy. You know, and it's about time it was looked at properly and we took control of it, because the government haven't got a clue, you know, and the NHS needs that money and needs money ploughing into it. And then you've got the minister saying, Chief Minister, let's bring more people to the island. No, that's the wrong thing to be doing. And it's like, you know, we need to have more say about government before they start spending our money on silly projects, Andy, I think.
Steve, you've probably driven up and down it. Do you think the promenade in Douglas looks finished?
I think it's an absolute disgrace. If you go back, just let's rewind very quickly, to when you were stood outside the Crescent Leisure Centre having a burger in the summer. Look at the prom as it was, right? It was a good, it did the job, there wasn't an issue with it, and yes, okay, the surface was breaking down, but you remember they did a really rough job when they re-tarmacked it and said, this is just a quick, rough job,
yeah.
And, you know, we'll be getting to it. That was far better than the finish they've done now. And the layout of the prom, and roundels, still we go on about, there's no such thing as a roundel. We have to treat that as a roundabout. You know, I don't like the layout of the prom, and I think it's a disgrace, the money it's cost, and it's still not finished. There's no nice lights down there. Years ago, you had all the lights down the prom. It's nothing now, and it's not. It's a terrible place. It really is.
Well, I think, you know, the consensus is, Steve, at night time, it doesn't look pretty. It used to look pretty.
It doesn't. Well, the thing is, we're a small island. They could have spent some lovely money and put some really beautiful lights up there to set that promenade off, illuminate it properly, put some fantastic colourful lights down, and just set that promenade off, you know. They haven't done that. They're too interested in putting marble flagstones down. Oh, doesn't this marble look nice on floor? Not really. It's full of chewing gum now. People spitting out chewing gum and just left on the floor. You know, it's an absolute joke how they... You know, it doesn't matter what the Manx public come up and say. Well, that's garbage. That's not good. That, but go ahead and build it anyway. So it doesn't matter what we say on Manx radio or people having their say, because the government doesn't listen. And it's about time the people are heard, kicking off for their rights. Was fantastic. They should have the say, and they should be heard by the government now.
Okay, all right,
get
Steve.
Change, Andy. Take care.
Appreciate that. Thanks for calling today. It's 6 minutes before one. How were DOI surprised by the depth of rock at the Edward Pier? Surely they did a proper survey before digging it. This is a new marine pontoon that isn't going to be there for the moment. It's going to be delayed months, they're saying now, because the rock is a lot deeper than they thought it was. It has to be there because of the new boat. The new boat arrived last year. Join the dots yourself. Last night at the Roundhouse, we've heard from Andrew Jessop, Chair of the Commissioners. We've also heard from the floor. One of the two MHKs for the area, Stu Peters, didn't turn up, but Jane Paul Wilson did.
I recused myself from Council of Ministers because I wanted to make sure I could represent the community, and you have to be very clear which hat you're wearing. I think a number of things have been highlighted by all of you in your questions tonight. I think the truth is these things are complex. So whilst I absolutely empathise that there are a number of issues that need resolving, and I think my understanding is the government's position is they want to work with the commissioners to resolve these things in the interests of the community and the local businesses who are being impacted, I don't think it's possible to easily wave a magic wand, because the number of questions and the issues you've raised have highlighted some of the complexities around it.
That was the situation there. That was Jane Paul Wilson. There speaks a corporate lawyer, of course. So that was the Roundhouse. On the other side of the Isle of Man, in Peel, or if you're in Peel, in the centre of the Isle of Man, proposals for that Peel community hub, comprising a cafe, bowling clubhouse, a public toilet designed to regenerate part of Peel Prom, have been rejected by the planners. BBC Isle of Man reports that the application for permission in principle for an area of marine parade split the opinion of the planning committee, some for, some against, but ultimately turned down. Concerns have been raised during the meeting that the designs didn't cater to the wider needs of the community. Peel commissioners said the indicative plans outline the potential size of the development, and the community room would allow for a variety of users. The site at the northern end of Peel Prom, the old swimming pool site there by the bowling green, lies in an area designated for tourism in the Peel local plan, and of course is currently home to two hard-serviced tennis courts. Have you ever seen anybody? Well, I have seen occasionally people playing tennis on there, but not morning, noon and night, surely. The planning committee chairman, Rob Callister, questioned why a public consultation hadn't been carried out. And local authority clerk Derek Sewell said rejection of the plans was unfortunate, and it was now for the local authority's board to decide whether to appeal the decision or return with a detailed application. That's where we stand. And to finish on a quite different note, thanks also to Kane, who dropped me a note to say, am I the only person smelling concentrated sewage at the bottom of Broadway? Is there anything wrong with the iris system at the bottom of Broadway? I may go and take a sniff. Thanks to Chris Quirk on the phones today. Back tomorrow. WINT.